Moin Moin to Geeksprech, episode 87. And as you hear, it's an English episode again. And as always, I'm not alone. I am super happy to have Holly Lehman with me today. Holly, say hi and tell us, who are you and why are you here?
Hi, Eric. I'm so happy to be here. I wish I had a second language just as cool that I could introduce myself with, but English is my first and only language. So my name is Holly Lehman. I am based in Seattle, Washington. I'm born and raised in Las Vegas, Nevada. So I have, 10 plus years in hospitality, moved to Washington, started at Microsoft, had an amazing career at Microsoft, and now I have landed in this EUC by Broadcom space, running community. And I have to tell you, Eric, I am absolutely loving where I'm at. I do personally have two children, a husband. We are going to be married 20 years, September 25th, and a little dog that's usually my office mate. So okay. A little bit about me.
Awesome. So Microsoft was also the place where we both first met. I think it was back in, 2015, 16, MVP Summit, something around that.
Sometimes I forget how far back my history goes with this amazing MVP community. But yeah, we met during an MVP Summit. And those were some of the highlights, getting to work with Kathy Moya and just kind of dipping my toes into the MVP space and helping out where I could and getting to know this incredible group of very brilliant humans in technology.
Yeah, it was always a pleasure meeting you. And it's always a pleasure going to Redmond, especially for us MVPs, because we want to go into the nitty-gritty details of tech, and we want to discuss why things are not the way that we expect them to be.
Right, or how to improve them, right? Because you have that hands-on experience. Maybe it's not how you think they should be, but it's maybe not how it was intended. So learning from the best and the brightest. I mean, I always say talking to one MVP, you're talking to multiple customers in one conversation. So you're enhancing the product based on real world.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then I remember the last time I saw you at Microsoft, we were accidentally running into each other. So yep. I was in Seattle and you were meeting, I think with Martin, you were meeting.
And Femke.
And you just opened the door when I entered with another team. It was like, hey, Holly, you're here. And then like 2 days later, I was on LinkedIn and I saw Holly telling everybody that she is no longer with Microsoft. And I was like super shocked and super surprised. So maybe if you want to share this, like, what happened? And now you said you're with Broadcom. So there had been a transition for you, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it's a tough discussion, but I think it's one that people don't have. And what I'll start by saying is I will always be a Microsoft advocate. Microsoft gave me a career that I could have only imagined. That career grew my skills extensively. I was able to connect with some really amazing people, like Caruana and Heather Cook and Mary Rodriguez and Stephen Rose. And I mean, people, you know, Simon May, right? There's just so many people who have helped craft the career that I have now and helped me find that I do belong in tech. Right. Like when I started at Microsoft, I was an admin and I was just like, that's just what I'm going to do. And then I had people on the Intune team when you guys, there was only five of us when I started on Intune, and they made me feel like I can do PM work. There is a need for me and it's greater than what I was doing. And so that was a huge transition and it took a lot of confidence to go into a PM role, which is where I started in community. So for people listening, one, I want to take a step back and say all skills are needed in tech. We come with different skills and passions and they're all needed. And that's how I dipped my toes into running community. And then I said, well, there's this really amazing group of humans over here in configuration manager, SCCM world, that don't have the same education program that the cool people in Intune have. Why don't we grow that program? And the thing with Microsoft that was so cool, Kurt Humes, who was my manager at the time, said, hey, if you want to try it, let's see if it lands. And they're still doing it today. So it landed well. And then being mentored by people like Simon May, who said, I know you can run Ignite for our team. You can handle the stress. Let me teach you the best practices. And I realized, like, gosh, this is so fun running events. It was different than the events I ran back home in Vegas. And then going over to Azure saying, okay, I'm going to work with the cloud data management MVPs, and they're all really rad too. And then saying, well, there's these partners that I want to spotlight in Azure. Let's talk to them. And then we started a new program. And then I went over to Teams and love my role as a product marketing manager, running the blog for Teams and being a speaker and an EBZ presenter, doing all these things that I mean, honestly, Eric, if you had asked me 8 years prior, I would have said, there's no way I'm getting on a stage with Jeff Tepper in front of over 1,000 people. It's not going to happen. And it was just so many cool gifts that Microsoft gave me. And then, we were told that there were 3 rounds of layoffs, total of 10,000 people. And I just, Eric, I'll be honest, I was on a girls' trip and I told my husband I'm buying 3 things that I've been wanting because I know when I get back, I'm not going to have a job. And he's like, you have no clue. You're working on this huge project over $1.5 million. There's no way. You're the main logistics person. And I said, yeah, there is a way. My gut. And I came home and it was 2 days later and I was let go. And I was totally devastated by that happening. But I was with really, you know, I had a good community. I had a good system. My husband and my best friend's husband immediately came and picked me up. And I was a sobbing mess because I love my job. Yeah. I hate change. And I really saw community come to light. Like the amount of humans that they were to support me and offered, I'll write you a recommendation, call me if you need anything. And they genuinely meant it. And Eric,
I have seen it on LinkedIn. Like there were thousands, it felt like thousands of people commenting, liking your posts and cheering you up. And it's like, hey, there are people that need you. And so that was great to see that this community just works.
It really does. And so I went from feeling defeated and confused to like, okay, everyone kept saying there is light at the end of the tunnel. When one door closes, the other one opens. And I'm like, yeah. And then I ended up getting interviewed by VMware, and like the fact that they're so passionate about having a senior community program lead, like they're really passionate about it. And I'm like, this is so cool. And so then I learned it's not about the actual technology. It's not about the company. It's about the community and helping me to become the humanization of the technology for these humans that just want to make the products better. And so I would just say for anybody out there, there's so many humans going through this crazy time in tech that, it will land okay. You don't believe it at that time, but it will.
It will. Absolutely. So looking at all the things you've seen, like you just mentioned all the products you've been working with at Microsoft. Now you moved over to VMware, which is now Broadcom, and all the changes. So What's your perspective on change? I guess it's always a huge challenge. And you just said like you don't like change, but have you grown on this? Have you learned something about yourself, for example?
Yeah, 1,000%. And I feel almost, I hate seeing this, but insecure talking to someone like you who's so technically brilliant. But for someone like myself, who's coming from the other lens of the more non-technical side of it, technology's scary, right? Like dealing with Azure is intimidating for a lot of people. And I tried to learn it and learning about Teams and the nuances of Slack versus Zoom. And then I get into this world where like, guess what, Eric? I can now actually say I have expanded my portfolio because I'm now on Google Suite, which don't get me started on how I feel about that. I can't wait to go back to Office products. I'm now using, you know, Zoom and Slack and Google Suite, and I'm learning about the compete products. So Horizon and Workspace ONE and Dex and all these things. And so now it's like, it's really scary. But now if somebody asks me what's the difference or what do I feel more comfortable, I can actually talk based on what I've done. And being able to check the box that this was scary, but I did it, feels really good.
Yeah, and I guess you're kind of the living example of you don't need to be tech to work in tech.
100%.
That's a thing that I see, like a lot of people say, like, Eric, I could never do a job in the company like yours because I don't know how computers work and I don't know how to program or I don't know how to code or whatever. And it's like, I always say like, no, Most people in our company don't know how technology works.
Yeah.
But they know how to run a program. They know how to organize a project. They know how to talk to people, how to figure out things. And to be honest, even the MVPs, in many cases, they just have a good network and they know where to find things. It's not that we know everything just out of our head. Yes, we have a lot of technical experience and we are always making our hands dirty and we like that a bit. But in many cases, it's also me calling one of the other MVPs like, I've never done this. How did you do this in your other project? And that's like how it helps us. So what's your perspective on non-technical roles in the tech business, in the tech industry that we have out there?
Yeah, that they're super abundantly needed, right, Eric? So when I would run these events, I would look at some of the more technically driven coding, you know, brilliant nerds out there. And I say that with all kinds of love. But it's like, there's no way that they would have the passion around the chaos that comes with running an event or listening to customers or partners, or I love all of you MVPs, but all the feedback, right? It can be overwhelming because a lot of times there's really not much I can do at that moment. So it's when I looked at running events, I would look at some of the most brilliant minds that I knew. And I thought I would never put them on a stage. They will put everybody to sleep. But then you get someone out there like a Stephen Rose, who is whimsical, charismatic, super technical, but can make it really fun. So you need every skill set. The way I look at it, Eric, is I always say, if everybody coded, no one would sell anything. If everybody was advertising, nobody would be testing anything. If everybody was developing, but there were no testers, nothing. Like, so we all need each other, right?
Yeah.
And when I look at people that I love, like, you know, Isadora Katnik and the work that she does with events and community, like the fact that she's an MVP for community, I absolutely celebrate that because everybody deserves to have their skills and their talents amplified. So the fact that I now get to run a program where I get to amplify other humans in tech, I think it's the coolest job ever. And other people might say, I want to just go code something. Great, go do that because we need that too. So what I would tell people is look at what your passion is. My background was 10 years in law enforcement, 10 plus years in hospitality, and I'm loving my career right now in tech.
Yeah, that sounds great. So maybe for the people that still cannot imagine, what do I do without coding? What does a day in your life look like in your current role now? What are you doing? What are you driving in your role? What are the things that you try to achieve? Or like my favorite partner development manager at Microsoft would say, greetings to Jennifer, what does success look like for you in your day-to-day job?
So my answer, everybody that really knows me personally would think this is like the phoniest answer, but it's dead true because I am not data-driven, but I am learning. And I would say this is another thing to announce is like, for those people that think, well, I have this skill, but I don't have that skill. When you have the right team and the right network and the right community, they will help you learn what you don't think you know, right? Because if you have the passion to make it work, you'll learn the few nuances that you don't know. And so right now I'm learning how to find data where there's no data.
Okay.
Because in community, if you look at it, community typically ends up a spend. When you think of community, what do you think, Eric? You think travel, events, dinners, summit, swag. Those are all really expensive, right? Those are all expensive. And so what I need to do is identify, okay, social media. How can I identify the data to show the impact? Like, I don't know if you saw the crazy videos I made trying to get people to apply for the new EUC Experts program, but I needed to show like those silly videos I did, there were 6,000 impressions, 7,000 impressions, right? So when we're getting ready to run a community podcast, how many links, how many likes, how many engagements? How do we show value in swag? How do we show value in attending events? And right now, because really, Eric, we're in a startup mode. Everyone knows Broadcom selling the end user compute team. So any money I spend, I'm not spending anything yet. It's like, how do I show product impact? How do I show the value in whatever I'm hoping we can spend? And then how do I heighten the community so that we get valuable product feedback and then share that with engineering so that we can really show that the community is lending itself to making Horizon Workspace ONE even better?
Yeah. Okay. That's absolutely a good thing. And I guess especially the feedback side, and that's what many people see, is like, I have tested your software or I've used your software. I want you to do this and that. So that's always this, hey, here's my feedback. Now do what I asked for you. It's like, okay, but you're not alone there. There are thousands of people using a software and people have different kinds of feedback. So to understand that, you have to take that and have to consolidate it and prioritize it. And sometimes even just to say, okay, that's feedback, but no, we're not going that route. So that's hard for some people. And then the other thing is, it might be nice that you would like to have a, I don't know, not just a bright mode and a dark mode. You would like to have a blue mode. but who would invest in the blue mode if it doesn't drive any revenue? Because we're all working for money. That's the thing. I think that's hard for some people to understand.
And they don't also understand, because this is another thing that I love about community, is it's global, right? It's the one thing that can bring complete strangers together and sit and have a chat, right? But that said, when I'm talking to people in the US or I talk to someone in EMEA, the needs for fundamental feature are uniquely different. So when someone's like, I really need this feature, well, you're in California and I need this feature and I'm in this small little country in Sweden, the needs are very different and they're both needed. Now it's about how many people are asking for the same thing. How is it funneling in? What is the engineering's priority and the planning cycle? There's just so much that happens on the other side. And I kind of feel like monkey in the middle, where I'm looking at everybody. Right.
Yeah, that reminds me of the times when we had this German cloud from Microsoft. This the trial and error thing, and I had some clients that were like, "We want Intune in this German cloud," and Microsoft was always like, "Well, we got the feedback, but not sure right now." And then there were customers like, "Yeah, but I would bring 70 phones to it." I was like, yeah, they are most likely US customers that bring 70,000 phones to it if they do something on that end. So your 70 phones don't count.
Well, what you think is important might not be the same number of value that other people find important.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were mentioning events. We all like events. And I guess the last time we've met in person was in Prague for Express Live Europe.
Yes. So
tell us, what's your role in Express Live Europe? What are you doing there?
So for, you know, honestly, at this point, with Izzy being the lead for Express Live in Europe, it's going to be in Budapest, Hungary. And I'm so excited to see what she does this year, because honestly, she's one of the most creatively talented marketing queens I've ever met in my life. The ideas she has, the attention to detail, just inspire me to do my job better. And to see all the detail, like, who she called me and said, so I have this crazy idea. Will you be in the welcome keynote with me and dress up like a stormtrooper? And I was like, absolutely. What a crazy
I said idea. In first row, it was awesome.
So I'm like, yes, I'll do that. Yes, of course I will. And so this year we, you know, there are going to be some fun nuances that we're going to keep secret. But the cool thing is that I will be there with, you know, a different brand. I'll be under EUC and I'm hoping some of my team will be there. That's TBD. But I'll be there as a community reporter with Stephen Simon, basically humanizing the whole event, interviewing, getting people excited for 2025. I know there's going to be another one. And ideally, I want to run another career panel. I think it's really important to humanize the people that are working on the technology and what it means in your day-to-day life, right? And then if I'm so lucky, I'll submit a session on community and see how that lands. But I plan to be very busy. Lots of hugs, lots of selfies.
That sounds great. Just a side question at this point. For me, often traveling to the US, and I know how hard it is to get back to Germany after I've been for 1 week or 2 weeks in the US. For you coming to Europe and then jumping right into an event, is it hard for you?
So you know, we talked about how we had a passport debacle getting to Prague last year. But because of the accidental mishap, we ended up on a red eye flight, and I was so angry about it. I was like, this is going to be awful. It was the best thing, Eric, because I slept the whole time. So by the time we landed, it was like 9 a.m. and I felt alive and human. And I felt like I was on the right time zone. Now coming back is a different story, but, So by accident, we learned that, you know, when we do the red eye, we sleep, we land at 9:10 in the morning. And like, I wasn't a total zombie. We take a day just to sort of unpack and breathe. And then I feel like I'm rejuvenated and ready to go. And there's also, I mean, you know, Eric, like when you're going to present or see all your friends and faces you haven't seen, there's a level of just excitement and anticipation. It's like the coolest energy you can think of.
Yeah, that's right. Until your being tiring hits you in the face, then at somewhere in the night, and you just fall into your bed and you're super asleep. That's when like everything around you could be ripped down and you wouldn't recognize anything. That's absolutely what happens. So I know you're a big ambassador for women in technology too, and you were just mentioning Easy and you were running also a show where we're talking a lot. So what's the role of women in technology? So I always said, and that's a thing, I had it once in my life that I had a female consultant in my team. Mm-hmm. So there were always women around, like as a project manager or as whatever, a personal assistant, whatever. But I was like, no, I want to have a female consultant that goes with me in the project and discusses the architecture. And that was a great time. Unfortunately, but lucky for Microsoft, she got hired by Microsoft. So damn it. she was gone then. And then for quite a while, I had a woman as my leader, as my boss. And that was one of the best times I ever had, because it's like, there was a whole different level of working together. And we were like leading the team together. She was doing more on the people side and on the strategy side. And I was the technical nerd that got the team into, hey, we need to get certified and we need to look at this new feature and stuff. And it was working great. And we still have a great relationship now, even though I'm working for a different company. But it was one of my best times. So let's say I'm personally super convinced that women in technology and especially in the hands-on roles can have a huge impact. What's your view on that?
I would agree with you 1,000%. When I was, it was the SharePoint conference in Copenhagen, maybe 2 years ago now. And I have Kara Wanagatimo and Heather Cook to thank for getting me there. But I was asked to be the D&I speaker. And I talked about how difficult it was for me when I started in Microsoft. I felt like a fish out of water and I felt like I didn't belong. And this one day, I was at this point a PM. And my manager, Kurt Hume, said, there's like all these senior to principal level people. They're in a room. The event is tanking. You need to go in there and fix it. And I was a vendor. And I thought, why in the world are you sending me in there to all these people that are 17 levels above me? But then when I got in the room, I thought, because they can't fix this event. That's why I'm in here. And so he helped me gain my confidence that we're all needed. When I look at people like Shannon Kuhn that are incredibly brilliant when it comes to coding and the technology on Azure and driving change and educating others, and then I see other people that are able to do event logistics and marketing and budget, right? Like, I think we have this weird notion that to be technical, you have to be male. And it's like, no, we are, it's a whole new world. And my kids, they're 10 and 12, and I had both of them do coding classes because I want them to have their brain think differently. Did they like it? No, they hated it. But I wanted them to know they can do whatever they want, whatever they're passionate about. I've also sat in a role that for me was quite technical, where I had to review Azure Marketplace feedback. I hated that moment in my career, like literally hated it. I told my manager, I'm like, I don't know why you have me here doing this. My role was flipped during a reorg. But then a year later, I did it. And I was like, I'm capable of this. And so I think that we need to change the behavior and the dynamic that we're not capable. Everybody's capable. They just need to find what their passion and their strengths. And if they have, like when I was on Azure, I told Jim Britt and Tim Benjamin, I said, I just want to learn how to like understand what the architecture is for Azure. Right. I just want to write an ARM template. And they taught me. I didn't like it. I thought I was going to lose my mind. But you know what? I did it. And I felt really proud of myself that I got out of my box. And so what I would say is you don't have to get out of your box to be happy, but you definitely need to know what your confidence level is and what you bring to the table and celebrate that.
And that's, by the way, one of my strategies at bigger conferences. I tend to go into sessions that I have absolutely no clue about.
Yes.
So you will we see me sitting in a session about data analytics or in a session about Teams phone systems or something where I'm like, the best that I could be would be a user of it, but absolutely not an expert for it. Because, yeah, I like that feeling of being like, okay, I've never understood it, but let me at least understand that bit and I have learned something and now I do more. That's good.
But what the one thing that I was given feedback on, so when I was really nervous and I wanted to start presenting, Stephen Rose took me under his wing when we were on Teams. And he's like, let's just do like a co-presentation, like you'll get there. And he would do the really deep technical component. And I would do like, but here's how you actually like get adoption done. Here's how you get your end users to like use the product on a hands-on way. And of course, Stephen did too, but he was able to get more into the nitty-gritty technical components. And I was kind of like, here's how you do campaigns. Here's how you use community. Here's like the day-to-day. And I was really thankful the amount of people that came up to me and said, that was a great session because I actually understood ways to work with my team to take what I learned here at this event and then go impact what we're supposed to be doing in our day-to-day job. And that's important to me. My goal is to humanize technology.
That's great. So we had it earlier, but it just popped up back to my head and I'm really curious. So you came from a absolutely non-technical job into Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Let's say for everybody out there who's most likely not listening to this podcast, but maybe we can change that together.
Yeah.
But like, let's say for everybody out there that's working in whatever job, but says like, well, I'm thinking about if there's something else out there and maybe technology is something. Any advice how to get started, how to get into it? Like, how have you done it?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I started with what I already knew. I already knew how to be an EA. I was a executive admin for two vice presidents in hospitality. So I looked at my core skills. Like at the end of the day, take the technical out of it. What are my core skill set and what do I enjoy? I enjoy being around a team and making them awesome. And so then once I got into a role that I was like, okay, I can do this. I know the team. I know who to ask the questions to. I started to look at different job descriptions and talk to people and get mentor. Like, what does this job actually mean? Because Eric, we know a job description is really only like 30% of the actual job, right? So tell me about a day in a life in. And I would just start talking to people. And the more I realized that there's different PM roles, right? So you can be a technical program manager and really working on specific features and subsets and specs and deliverables. And then you can have the program manager that's lighting up a community, running a program for adoption, running a program for end user, you know, feedback. So once I realized like, oh, that actually sounds fun to me. I know how to take something end to end. I helped open a hotel. I was the fourth employee at Aria. It was dirt. And I was there when we opened the doors. So I'm like, I can do this end to end program management thing. And then you have to find like the right people that you trust. So Stacy Foltz hired me to run Intune customer program, and I just sort of started to ask the right questions. And I studied. I didn't, like, I'm not going to go deploy Intune. I don't want to use Intune, but I know it was on my phone, and I know what it did, and I knew how to talk to people about it. Yeah. So that's what I would say. I would say start with what you know. Start with where you're comfortable. Get a good mentor and research, talk to people, find out what an actual day in the life looks like.
Yeah.
And then you
don't be afraid of asking. I think that's a very important thing.
Yeah.
What I see quite often, because I'm doing a lot of coaching these days for young talents that want to grow and stuff like that. And one of the things that I see is they always have the feeling that I should know this already because they hired me, so I should know this. And I'm always saying like, no, you don't. You have had this role before, but in a totally different company. You had have this role before, but in a different technology. You had this role before, but it was 2 years ago and the IT market has changed 200,000 degrees. So it's absolutely fine to ask a question. And that's something that I'm super known for, is I sit in a meeting, 20 execs in the room, everybody pretends to absolutely know what it's about. And I'm the one like raising my hand, is like, guys, I didn't get it. Could you explain to me?
Right.
And then afterwards, you have people come and say, I was wondering the same, but thank you that you asked. And I was like, what the hell? Like all the execs that know how the game works, and they absolutely don't. So it's like, ask questions. That's like my main advice to everybody out there. It's there's no stupid question. There's no wrong question. And if someone has no time or has a different advice how you could get the answer, that's still a valuable feedback. But be eager to ask questions if you want to know something. I think that's
super important. But to your point, Eric, I was in Microsoft for almost 10 years. So the acronyms that I knew there are no longer applicable into my new world. And so I'm using acronyms that everybody just knew, right? Like MVP, totally different in this world versus Microsoft, right? I was using, just LT, right? LT, everybody knew was leadership. It's different here. There was another acronym that I was using. Gosh, I can't remember now. But anyway, and it's okay to say, you know what? I don't know what that acronym means, or even little nuances of how things are spelled or where there's a hyphenation. I was using end user compute for, I don't know, the last 4 months. And I just found out it's end user computing because I just was used to different terminologies.
Yeah.
And so it's okay. And I would say you actually look like the smarter person because you seem more humble to say, I don't really know. Can you just tell me what it means?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So Holly, there is, and now we can reveal if you have ever listened to an episode of this podcast or not. It's mean because the main episodes are in German, so I guess you have not.
I can tell you I have not.
No, but there's one question that every guest in my podcast gets asked at the end.
Okay.
And it's always the same question, and I always love the moment when I ask it because something happens after this. So let's see. Now I see you can't see her, but she's excited or afraid. Oh, I don't know.
I'm Let's waiting see. For a chicken to pop out somewhere. I don't know.
No worries. So the last and final question in this podcast is, if you would have a magic wish, what would it be? Around the topics we've been discussing in that call, and that podcast.
You know what? I would say I would wish that I can remain as happy in my career as I am right now.
Okay. Well, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. That's great. So we normally have like two different things. First, people get on silent mode. There's like, oh my God, what a question. Let me think about this. And then there are people like, well, Eric, I don't have one wish. I would have two or three. It was like, no, you just have one magic wish. That's not how the game works.
No, I'll then, tell you, I haven't been this happy or felt this respected or fulfilled or have energy again. The leadership I have right now reminds me of the leadership I had when I started on Intune. It was fresh. It was startup. I felt valued. I felt like you could use your creativity. There's a passion right now around community. And I'm like genuinely happy.
Great. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah.
So I would say if you want to see that happy face, the biggest advice is go to Expos Live Europe.
That's right.
In wonderful Budapest. That's where we will see you. And other than that, most likely you will be around at some other conferences, events, happenings.
Oh, yes. I have a list. And follow me on LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Connect with me on Twitter. I love connecting and networking. And thank you for having me, Eric. This was really enjoyable. I love seeing you. And this was just so nice that you highlight people in community.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Thanks everybody out there for listening. Stay tuned, stay healthy. Hear you next time. Thank you. Bye-bye.